Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Eben Novi Williams, and this is the No Way Shohei, Don't Say Parlay, sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
If you get an audible chuckle, you know it.
We'll take it.
Yeah. I was expecting, like, no way, Shohei. I thought you were going to end it there. And then you went, and oh, that was really good. Again, good effort. You didn't have that much lead time, although not surprising that we would lead with Shohei Ohtani.
Of course.
So all in all, excellent. Still not, because of the creativity needed of NWSL, and I think that is your high watermark. But this is a very good place for you to live. If you can match this effort, creativity, and enthusiasm, you will be fine week in and week out with me.
Well, don't bet on it, Scott.
I will. God. Yeah. So, now I have to kill you. Have we exchanged roles today?
Yeah, I was going to say, very Scott comment there.
What is happening?
So easy, let's get into the biggest news in baseball in the past week, one of the biggest sports stories. Yeah.
I'm sure Rob Manfred's really happy. That's the biggest story in baseball. Right,
baseball
now.
Went from having replica uniforms on the players to having a much bigger problem. Shohei Ohtani, the Japanese
uncomfortable. You know it's bad when Rob Manfred's out there going, "Aren't the uniforms uncomfortable?"
have I shown you the new uniforms?
Those pitch clocks. What's wrong with the pitch clock? What's with those wild card teams? Is that working out?
So I'll give what we know right now as a basic backdrop, and then let's get into
this. Shouldn't take too long because we don't know much.
Interpretation, pun intended. We know that according to a few reports, LA Times and ESPN, apparently Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, a man by the name of Ippe Mizuhara, who's been with Shohei for a while, they appear to be close friends.
Give me your rehearsal time on the name. How many times?
15 times.
Okay, good.
The translator apparently, and we can get into who actually maybe was placing these bets, but the translator racked up a pretty good amount of debt, $4.5 million at least, offshore gambling, or not offshore, gambling illegally. Sports betting is not legal in California, neither is much of the other gambling. He claims he did an interview with ESPN, which is very bizarre, but at some point in the reporting process, he got on the phone with a reporter at ESPN, claims that it was his gambling, not Shohei's, claims that Shohei did not know about it, also claims that he was betting on sports but not betting on baseball, which is a critical distinction, which we will get into. And then a spokesman for Shohei Ohtani hinted that maybe there was quote-unquote massive fraud happening here. It's very unclear right now, Scott, about details. We don't know all that much. We just know that somewhere in Shohei Ohtani's camp, there was a big gambling debt, bets that were placed illegally via a bookie, not through a regulated sports book like a DraftKings or a FanDuel.
Which is crazy in my mind anyway.
And now not only is baseball investigating, obviously, but there is also bigger, badder investigations happening at the federal level. That is essentially where we are right now.
All right, so the only question I think you need, and you start right here to think there's something amiss, is who floats an interpreter $4.5 million? Who allows him to rack up these sorts of gambling debts? Unless they're paying interpreters a whole lot more than I thought they were. I don't know. And let me be fair. I don't know anything about, insert name here, Novi Williams, since you practiced.
Ippei Mizuhara.
Thank you. So when I point to you, you say his name. So unless, point.
Ippei Mizuhara.
Unless he is from a shipping magnate family, unless he went in deep on Bitcoin and did really, really well, maybe he's got tons of money and he just enjoys traveling with Shohei Ohtani and being the interpreter. I don't know. But question number one would be, how does somebody who I presumably doesn't make that much money rack up $4.5 million? That is why you don't even have to go any further. You look right at Shohei Ohtani and say, what is going on here, my friend?
Absolutely. And then the second question, so to tease from that, this is illegal activity, as I said, right? This is not regulated sports betting.
And doesn't he know anybody in New York who could make a FanDuel bet?
Well, that's also illegal.
Sorry, I don't want to leave out DraftKings or any of the others, but come on.
To be very clear, that's also illegal to have someone place a bet in a legal jurisdiction on your behalf. But the big question for me, and the second question, because you hit on the first one, is this indeed the interpreter, or is this Shohei, and how much did Shohei know? That's question number one. I think the bigger question, in a lot of ways, is were they betting on baseball? That seems to be that is, from a baseball standpoint, from a scandal standpoint, I am totally fine. Even if it's Shohei, I'm fine with Shohei Ohtani racking up millions of dollars betting
on
NFL and NBA. All of that is fine. Should he be doing it in a legal way? Absolutely. But in the grand scheme of crimes, betting with an illegal bookie is not the thing that I want to go after.
I'd say there's a problem if he's doing the over-under of the Ottawa Senators and Philadelphia Flyers, but that's just me. Maybe not.
The big question for baseball and for him, I think, is was he or was the interpreter betting on baseball? Because we have seen Pete Rose is the obvious example there. There is a very hard line that baseball draws. This is one of the biggest fears for commissioners, for owners, is a star player. And Shohei is the ultimate star. He's the platonic ideal of a baseball star at this point. A star player being involved in betting on the actual sport that he or she is playing, his own games, not his own games, whatever it is, that is, and it's going to happen. It's happened before. It's happened in the NFL, obviously, with smaller names and in much smaller ways. Certainly not with this volume, if the $4.5 billion is $1 million is any indication. But that is the question. It's why baseball is doing this investigation. I cannot imagine baseball really cares if Shohei is doing, largely probably doesn't care if Shohei is betting on other sports in this way. But they certainly obviously really care if Shohei is betting on baseball. And that is the question we are awaiting answers on, and who knows if we'll ever get them.
Yeah, I mean, boy, if you're betting on the game, you know the game you play, and you're still losing $4.5 million, something's really, really wrong, right? I mean,
well, the odds are stacked against you, even if you're an insider.
You would say, I would see why somebody would be tempted if they were among the lower paid people. Like, you're like, oh, this is the biggest problem, like the star. Yeah, from baseball's perspective, they don't want to lose a star. You know, they want this guy playing. But man, why would somebody who just signed whatever his contract is, I know a lot of it's deferred, but like clearly he doesn't need the money.
Yep.
So like that's problematic if it's just, again, if he's betting on bait. We do not know, and unfortunately we're recording this before he speaks at Dodger Stadium. I do not expect him to come with a full story.
Huge medical
other thing. Than a, yeah, you know, whatever we already think we know, and let the investigations take it where they go. But if I am a commissioner, I am worried every single day, because I think you could probably survive, you know, one scandal, you know, whatever. But the minute anyone in the public believes that these games are not on the up and up, the results, the final outcomes are not on the up and up, that is the one thing I firmly believe that could prompt addicted customers, as I call them, fans, to leave sporting events.
And you're seeing already, I am shocked at any time, and I've noticed this with March Madness, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but anytime there is a bad call at the end of games now, anytime something crazy happens, the amount of people that I see on social media that are immediately going to their bets, their wagers, this is unfair, the ref is on the take, the player's on the take, all that stuff. It is, the more legal gambling there is, and there's a lot of it, and all these leagues have embraced it, the more that happens, the more this kind of wandering conspiracy theory is going to be part of the narrative. I want to make sure I also say, and I don't want to downplay the potential dangers of a star like Shohei Ohtani betting on other sports and getting into debt because of it, because very often the way that people, you see this in soccer all the time, Scott, the people who end up match fixing are often soccer players or people in soccer players' orbits who were doing normal betting on non-soccer things originally, got in the hole. Suddenly they're $100,000 down, $200,000 down. Then suddenly the bookie's coming to them and saying, hey, the way you can make this up to us is a little bit of information. Oftentimes when you rack up big debts gambling, that leads you down the path of doing the things that you weren't doing originally, but that is really bad for your sport and your profession. So there's certainly that concern if this is Shohei or even if it is Shohei's interpreter. But the other thing I'll say here is that the flow of information, which is something that a lot of leagues guard fairly closely, takes on a whole new meaning in the world of all this gambling, right? And this is another challenge that baseball teams, all of them, are going
to
have.
Yep. I'm around, you know, all the time talking to people, and there have been many times, and I have not done anything with it, obviously, but there have been many times where I have known, I mean, literally after a doctor or a coach or whoever came out of a training room or came out of a morning workout as to whether a star player on a team was going to participate that night before the line or something had happened and they were going to miss a game. It wasn't even an injured player, but something came up that morning where they were going to miss the game. So the line would not even be respective of an injury or anything, where I have gotten information that would absolutely move the line and affect the way people would bet. Shut my mouth, go about my business. But I mean, I don't know. This is the world we live in, and this stuff has got to be happening. How is it not happening?
And let's take all this on face value for a second. Let's say it is Shohei's interpreter. Think of just how many people are in the know, right? Between, as you said, reporters, friends, family, cousins, physical therapists, trainers, interpreters, tax people, financial advisors. There's so many people that have close relationships that probably
hear
these
things. Well,
this
money was wired, by the way. I mean, there are protocols when you wire this much money.
Yeah. And we're going to learn a lot more about the actual nature here and probably learn a bit more at some point about who is actually doing the betting. To me, it underscores, I don't bite on the kind of fear of gambling necessarily, because this is separate from, I think, a lot of that in some ways. But I do definitely think that this does show very deeply all the concerns, the layers of concerns that every sports league and college sports has. And then one more thing, because Shohei is the star in Major League Baseball. He is, in my opinion, the coolest thing Major League Baseball has produced in the past 10 years. This is, again, not an ordinary player and not even an ordinary star. This is the highest paid baseball player, the highest paid player in team sports in North American history.
Show, don't tell, to back up you up. I told you this, where he had Focus Group of One and his pals having a World Baseball Classic party to watch that game, the final game. So, yeah, he's that cool. He broke through to my kid's cranium. That is not easy to do.
Could not be a single worse probably athlete for any athlete in any sport than for this to happen in baseball with Shohei Ohtani. So there's definitely a layer to this there as well. And that means that, and I'm not trying to be conspiracy theory at all, but there's a lot of people that have a vested interest in this not being a huge scandal, right? And we will see how that plays out over the coming days. Shohei, as you said, is speaking shortly after we finish recording, over days, weeks, and probably even months.
Can I talk about something related that we didn't say we were going to speak about, but it just prompted? Because it's all related. I mean, it's all this ecosystem of sports betting. And I will tell you that I've taken on sort of at least a more cautious take now as a parent of a teenager, and I see the other kids. I mean, there are kids who have 13, 12-year-olds who have FanDuel accounts. I don't know if they're you know, lying about who they are age-wise, but they are placing these bets. And then you put on the television, and there's Reese Davis on ESPN. Mm. Did you see this over the weekend?
Oh, I saw it, yeah.
Yeah, I understand what I'm not looking to throw him in the fryer. I understand what he was doing. Sort of their picking expert was saying that, in her estimation, take the under in this game and here's why, right? Oh, so she laid out a great argument as to why the under in the game made sense and that's the thing to bet. And he called it a risk-free investment. That is just, I would say, regrettable verbiage to utilize when talking about gambling. And to his credit, he came out and he said, listen, I was talking about it. I didn't mean. But it's just sort of like where we are now. It's becoming so commonplace. Do we look down the road? You know, where are we if we look at where Europe is in sports betting? They're two decades ahead of us. And what are the problems there? And is that what we're headed for?
I think the answer is yes. There, in my opinion, is a huge reckoning coming.
History
for
does not
sports betting advertising
yeah.
and
yeah.
particularly, and this is a this Reese Davis is a good example, because ESPN Bet was created. It's a partnership between ESPN and Penn Internet and Entertainment. The close relationship between the biggest sports media companies in the country and the biggest sports betting companies in the country, it just needs such an extra level of scrutiny. And the way that ESPN covers ESPN Bet needs, for all the reasons you just said, it's just so much delicate and so much, just such a careful kid gloves in some ways on that relationship. And Reese Davis saying, no, this is a risk-free investment, is the absence of that, right? That it's the total vacuum of any of that responsibility. I'm sure he's getting a talking to. I'm sure he understands.
Oh, he came out with a statement afterwards. Sure. He followed with, you know, I didn't mean that it wasn't. Yeah, yeah.
Did you see his Twitter apology, by the way?
This
is an all-timer. I'm gonna pull this up for you and read it to you. So he tweeted a long statement that was way more than 280 characters. So it was broken up into three tweets. And the way that it got character limited out, I'm gonna read you one.
Oh no!
I'm gonna read you one of these tweets, because if you look at this in a nutshell, during a segment this morning on College Game Day, due to ESPN picks hitting yesterday, I joked that the advice was more like risk-free betting. As we all know, such a thing does not exist. Obviously, there are risks. Though I'm not a gambler, I strongly encourage people who do. That's the end of the tweet. And then the next tweet picks up, partake. They should do so with prudence, caution, care, fiscal and personal responsibility, which I think is so great. It literally cut him off right there, where I strongly encourage people who do.
Page break. Oops. Yeah. What are you going to do? But I was saying, it's that history does not repeat itself. It's patterns of human behavior do. You know, if this was freed up 20 years ago in Europe, pattern of human behavior. Let's see. I don't see any reason why the path will be much different here.
Yeah.
And you know what would be ripe for that, by the way? Like the ripe conditions for this sort of disruption? College basketball.
Mm.
Big time college basketball, where the participants may feel as if they're not getting their fair share of big money being earned. And, you know, hey, somebody approaches them. I'm happy to give you X should you miss a basket. Should you give me some inside information? Should you just, if you just, the spread is 6, you know, if you're up 8 late, maybe a missed free throw or a turnover. But, you know, the interest is there. At least now we like to say, what are they called? The integrity monitors.
Yep.
You know, well, you do have many, many flags these days. By the way, a lot of times in like youth tennis, which I find interesting, but you get a lot of questionable betting patterns that are at least found out. You can say that about legalized sports betting,
yep,
that the sunlight has acted as disinfectant.
And this is, I know you want to transition to college basketball, but that reminded me of one last point I'll make on Shohei is, in some ways, there is a group of people who read these stories and think, wow, this sports betting, regulated sports betting needs to be curtailed. We've gone too far. And then within the sports betting world, there's a lot of people having the opposite effect, right? Which is, all of this is happening at an illegal bookmaker because California has not legalized this. If there was a world in which someone who wanted to bet that much money could do so legally in California in a way that it's regulated, and maybe some of the integrity monitors you're talking about, the data partners, have more sunlight into what those wagers are, maybe a lot of this either gets found out sooner or maybe doesn't happen at all. So I do think there's an interesting, I think there's some people who look at this story and think, wow, we've gone too far with legalized sports betting. And then there's some people who, depending on where they are, look at the story and say, this is why we need more legalized sports betting. So it will be interesting to see in California specifically, which is not anywhere close to, or at least not right now, anywhere close to legalizing sports betting, if this has the effect of speeding up that process or if it has the effect of slowing down that process even more.
All right. Well, let's look at the NCAA tournament. Yep. Like you mentioned, we're through the first two rounds on the men's side. I think this is a perfect microcosm of why sophisticated sports coverage is needed, and one of the reasons why we started Sportico, because you and the other folks came up with some just great, great early round stories, all dynamite sports business related. I'll let you pick which one if you have a favorite child. You may not have your byline, but you had your hands in the clay at some point. Arizona, Grand Canyon University, James Madison. Which one you want to tackle first? I'm happy. I'm here for you.
Let's do Grand Canyon first.
Grand Canyon University, listed on the NASDAQ under Lope. Go ahead. Tell me more.
There's so many.
Isn't that bizarro right there? We're talking about a team in the NCAA tournament listed on the NASDAQ.
Well, are they listed on the NASDAQ? I mean, it's part of the question, right? The Grand Canyon University claims to be a nonprofit university. It claims that nonprofit status because it was owned by a publicly traded company for a very long time. And then in 2018, the publicly traded company sold the university to a nonprofit that it had set up. And in that deal, signed a simultaneously agreement for the publicly traded company to operate almost all of the university and get paid 60% of the university's revenue for doing all of those services, a master services agreement.
What could go wrong in such a setup?
And so they claim after that transaction, oh, great, we're a nonprofit. And they have got their accrediting agency and a few other people to say yes. Someone who has not said yes is the Department of Education and now the FTC.
The FTC.
Both of whom, different branches of the U.S. government, have both said, look, you're not a nonprofit. You're operating clearly for the profit of this publicly traded company. And as a result, you're a for-profit institution. So the FTC a couple months ago sued the school for essentially a variety of different misleading and deceiving and lying marketing campaigns, both about the price of their school and the nonprofit status. The Department of Education has been fighting with Grand Canyon University for a long time over it. One of the reasons it matters for sports, Scott, is that the NCAA treats for-profit schools very differently than it treats nonprofit schools. And nonprofit schools are eligible for all of the payouts and the scholarships and the grants and all those things. A lot of that money that the NCAA distributes, for-profit schools, according to the NCAA, are not able to get that. The NCAA appears to be treating Grand Canyon right now like a nonprofit, even though a lot of branches of the government claim that it's a for-profit. It's a fascinating story. We've written a bit about it at Sportico over the past few years. Grand Canyon won a game this year, obviously won its first tournament game. The athletic department is spending a lot. It doesn't take a big leap, Scott, to think that everybody at that level thinks of athletics as a front porch, but Grand Canyon
is... Hold on. Hold on. This is one of those generational things. I think the answer is going to be yes, but you just brought up what name comes to mind because you just said Grand Canyon and Leap in the same sentence. Does anything come to mind for you?
Evel Knievel, is that what you're thinking?
Yes, thank God. Okay, thank God. Okay.
Pass that test. Yeah, great.
I feel better too because that's when you should know. Okay, good.
Every time you cut in like that, I'm like, now I have to tell everybody that I have no idea what Scott's talking about.
No. That's what I thought you would. I'm glad. But you say Grand Canyon and Leap. I'm glad you know Evel Knievel.
Yeah, so the Grand Canyon is clearly it's spending a lot on its athletic department. It has 25,000 students in Arizona and then another 90,000 that are doing remote online education.
92,000 online.
Yeah, it's the numbers are wild, but clearly basketball success and maybe other sports in the future, but basketball is where it seems like they've had the most success. That is just such a huge driver. If you're an online school or you're a school that not a lot of people know about, having a week or in some cases 2 weeks in the spotlight every March or one March can be such a huge, huge financial benefit. So name recognition is something Grand Canyon cares a lot about, and they're pouring money into basketball. I was looking at the other public schools in their conference. They're in the WAC. Most schools in the conference spend $1.5 to $2.5 million on basketball. Grand Canyon spends more than $6 million on basketball. They're by far the biggest spender on basketball in their conference. They've been very successful on the court. I'm sure that's very correlated. Bryce Drew, former Valparaiso star, is the head coach. There's a lot of interesting things there. But yeah, this is just, as you said, it's one example of a school you see playing in March Madness and you think, I've never really heard of that school. And then you peel back the onion just a little bit and you find really interesting business stories.
Now the question I have is, let's say the administrators, the attorneys representing the school, because they've already been fined again by the Department of Education, they're appealing that. Are those folks, when they make the NCAA tournament, are they happy?
Yes.
They are.
Oh, I think they're thrilled.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Then they win a game and knowing the inspection that is about to happen, the spotlight that is about to be shined on your institution, those layers, like you said, are going to be peeled back when you win. This is the attention you're going to get now. They're happy with this?
I think you're happy with it because I think, again, I think most people are writing about lovable Grand Canyon, the school you've never heard of in Arizona that's fighting, going up against Kentucky and beating them or whatever it is.
Peel the onion, cry.
Yeah, again, I think that most of the coverage they get is like, oh, wow, you've never heard of this school, but man, did their basketball team do really well this year? And that's great. That's the dream coverage they get, right?
200,000 online. Okay, let me move now to James Madison.
Sure.
Because why? I'm going to put Arizona last because why not? Same sort of thing. It's just, oh, my God, what a great story. The athletic department is the smaller school, the Cinderella, they win. Well, guess what? This is akin to the cable bundle, right? You know where I'm going with this?
I do know, yep.
All these people who don't watch CNN, don't watch the Garden Channel, don't watch Food Network, don't watch ESPN, whatever it is, you are paying, as part of that cable bundle, you are paying for channels that you never watch. Well, if you are a student at JMU, guess what? And many, many probably do not even realize this. Yep. You are paying a substantial amount of your tuition, student fee, we'll get into the specifics, but you are paying a good chunk of change for your athletic teams, whether you ever go see a football game, basketball game, soccer game, swim meet, whatever it may be, money's coming out of your pocket.
Student fees, they're a thing on many campuses, Scott. As you know, it's mandatory. Every student, as you say, pay it. $2,600 a year from your tuition at JMU goes for every single student, goes into the athletic department. They are, the way that schools account for this is a little bit different depending on the school, but we tabulate this data for every FBS public school. In 2023, James Madison claimed $53 million in money coming from student fees to the athletic department.
Direct student.
It's by far the largest number that we've seen in 6 years of doing it at Sportico, keeping these data.
That's even if somebody classifies as tuition. Like you have to go further, dig a little bit deeper, but you can find out how much the student is
responsible. JMU is one of the heaviest subsidized programs in FBS. They are, the way that I would describe it is the saying, you have to spend money to make money. They are putting that to the test right now in athletics. They are spending a lot of money. They're spending a lot of money and not making a lot of money right now in terms of revenue generated by the athletic department. It's shockingly small. They have moved in the past few years from FCS football, the former Division I AA, up to FBS football. They're now in the Sun Belt. On the court and on the field, in the sports that matter, they have been very successful very quickly. The football team was a top 25 team almost this entire season. The men's basketball team was ranked a bit this year, obviously won a game in the NCAA tournament as well. If what you care about is just athletic success, spending money has been a huge success for James Madison. If what you care about is financially and making prudent decisions, the jury is very much still out on that. And I wish a lot of the coverage would show that a little bit more. But
you know what they should do?
They are spending a lot of money that is not being generated by athletics right now, in the hopes that when all of this nets out, the football and basketball teams are good and they're making more money. And that second piece has not happened, at least not yet.
I think what they need to do is up that fee to $5,000 per. They need to hire Nick Saban as a consultant. They need to build a better practice facility with ripe avocados and Chipotle for all at any time during the day. They need a new stadium that seats 102,000 people that has VR goggles at the seats. That's what they need to do.
That is it.
That's how you win. That's how you become a big program. That's it. Greg Sankey, call me. I've got some ideas for you.
Book it.
Absolutely. Oh, my Lord. And by the way, I know you can answer this question. And you'll know why I know if I said to you, by the way, Eben, how much is a win worth in the NCAA tournament to these institutions? Oh. I'm going to give you some credit here, you and your colleagues here.
Yeah.
What's the number I want to say? What is a win worth? And then I'll say why I'm asking.
Yeah, a win in this year's tournament will be worth just a shade under $2 million paid out over 6 years to the conference that the team is playing in right now.
And some conferences distribute that equally, some don't. And I know this because you and Lev and Matt Palacio, I got to tell you, man, if you had told me we're going to do an animated sort of look at what wins are worth in the NCAA tournament, how they're calculated and who done what, I'd have been like, yeah, whatever. But you need to promote it again. It is one of the best explainers I have ever seen on the money of March Madness. Well, it is just a really, really well done piece of journalism.
For folks who are, and I appreciate you saying that, for folks who are curious, it's all over my social account and Sportico's as well. People will see it this tournament
Novi_Williams.
The provenance for this video is essentially that every year Lev and I have to reteach ourselves how this process works. The NCAA sets aside essentially $220 million every year that it is going to award based on performance in the men's and men's only March Madness tournament. And the way they do it is so complex. It's 6 year rolling to the conference, not to the school. You don't get one for playing in the final. You do get one for playing in the first four.
Yep.
There's 660 units out for play right now. That's going to change once the COVID year disappears. It's very complex. And I have learned in talking to a lot of people in college sports that they also don't understand it.
They didn't know.
Yeah, yep. They have a rough idea of how it works. Some people think that the price of the unit stays consistent for the 6 years after you earn it. That's not true. Some people think you start earning the units the year you play in the tournament. That's also not true. It starts the following year. There's so much misinformation out there. And honestly, part of doing this video was just Lev and I deciding that instead of having to relearn this process in an hour every year, let's just watch the video and we'll remember how to do it in 5 minutes.
Well, can you pin it to the top of your Twitter feed?
I can. Yes, I will do that.
Yeah, why don't you pin it there for a few days? I'm curious to see how many people go and look at it.
Give it a look. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't ballyhoo stuff here, but this, I mean, it's well done, it's entertaining and educational, which is a lot of what we try to be here, so absolutely. And go ahead, you want to say something?
Well, I'm curious, have you watched, or has the focus group of one watched any March, what does the March Madness look like in his friend's world?
Yeah, he really thought, I kid you not, earnestly believed he was going to pick a perfect bracket. You know, and when he lost his first game on the opening day, I'm not afraid to admit that there was an F-bomb drop. I don't – is he watching – I guess, yeah. You know, oh, yeah, it was very funny. He wanted to see – it was a lesser-known team. He's like, Dad, where's this game? You know, he's trying to find it. I said, oh, was Grambling State in the tournament?
Grambling State was in the tournament.
Okay, so I think it was the Grambling State first, and they were close or whatever.
Okay.
So I'm like, oh, Grambling State, that's going to be on True TV. I just went, that's a True TV game if I ever heard of it. So I popped it on, and he actually called me, Dad, you're the GOAT. I got praise from my son because I was able to find True TV and the game he wanted to watch in less than 20 seconds.
It's the simple things
he
in
couldn't
life,
do
right?
something that, and I found it right away. Like, normally he'd be all over like some illegal Twitch stream and finding it, right? I did it.
You'll drive him to Montreal for hockey, there and back. No comment, but you can find True TV in 10 seconds and you're the GOAT.
No, does not care. By the way, Nationals coming up. Go Mid Fairfield. Nationals coming up. Plymouth, Michigan. Yeah, of course, you know, you and I, we're going to be on assignment. I'm missing it unless they advance to the quarterfinal. I can make my way there and see the focus group of one play. But anyway, go see this thing. It's a really, really good look. Educational. I was entertained. I knew, 75% of it and still watched the whole thing and loved it. So go for it. We were going to talk about the NFL owners meeting, some other stuff, but forget it. We've been going for a while. Nothing big's coming out of it. There's no private equity being approved. They're talking about it. Tom Brady deal not approved yet. Yeah, talk to me in May when maybe we'll have something approved. They're looking at a whole bunch of plans for private
equity. Exactly. He is Scott Soschnick. You can find him on Twitter at Soschnick. I am Eben Novi Williams. You can find me on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you very much to Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.